services. There's the Sunshine Coast Housing Needs Report and an implementation framework that came after it. I've also updated some of the informations through Stats Canada to make it more current because we had more information come out last year. Also looking a lot at what other communities are doing in British Columbia. There's some great work that's going on. We don't need to reinvent the wheel, which is great to know. And you know, there's a lot that we can learn from other communities. So there's a really important principle called the housing continuum. Essentially, what that really means is that we need a balanced housing community that provides the types of housing to meet the unique needs of all people in our community. So that includes, you know, in this diagram, we're looking at it mainly from kind of a service perspective. In other words, everything from shelters and transitional housing all the way through to affordable housing and market home ownership. We also need to look at the types of forms, like the structures and the tenures of housing. So that means that we're looking at single detached houses, but we're also looking at mobile homes and townhouses or lock-off suites. And so we need to be very mindful that we need to have all of that inventory to represent the unique needs of everybody in our community. In terms of housing needs on the Sunshine Coast, this is very obvious. You know what we know, that the high cost of housing, so both for ownership and for rental, it's impacting everybody. In particular, it's impacting vulnerable people in our community, single-parent families, people who have disabilities, seniors, especially seniors on fixed incomes, single working adults, pretty much across the board. So I've divided this up into what I call market housing and community housing. Market housing is literally that. So that's your typical, house or apartment that you're buying at the market rate or renting at the market rate. And I'll be talking about community housing afterward, which is subsidized housing. So for market housing, and this comes out of the housing needs assessment, the most critical need is for market rental options and more affordable home ownership. We have an aging population that's driving demand for smaller units, and the highest needs are for studio, one-bedroom, and two-bedroom units. And there's also a critical need for incentives and regulations that promote and protect rental inventory, just because it is so there's such a huge demand for that. In terms of community housing or subsidized housing, it's pretty much critical across the whole spectrum. So affordable housing, when we say the word affordable, we're saying 30% of your income is spent on housing. That's what deep affordable means. So affordable and below market rental options, supportive housing that across the spectrum, so for seniors or for people with disabilities, transitional and second stage housing, and then those support services that allow people to stay housed. So those are outreach support or home support programs, even programs that provide housekeeping and those type of services are really important to allow, in many cases it's for seniors to be able to stay at home. So looking at the town of Gibson's, and these are current stats, you probably know most of this information, but the population is just under 5,000 people. Our median age is quite high, it's 56. We have just under 3,000, 2,500, I can't round here, 2,285 private dwellings. And just over half of those are single detached houses, which are unaffordable for median earning households. Just under 25% are apartments. And so the remainder are kind of an assortment of, either mobile homes or auxiliary dwellings, other types of structures. What's interesting to note here that of those homes, so of those 2,285 dwellings, over 78% of them are occupied only by one or two people. In terms of affordability, looking at the market value of houses in Gibson's, this is 2022, a detached house, the average cost was $1.4 million. A townhouse was, you know, less than half of that, 625,000, and a condo was 480,000. And interesting to note also is that the most common new household type is projected to be a non-census family, which are primarily comprised of individuals living alone. So a non-census family means one or more people that aren't related, either through marriage or common law. So that's what that term means. So what we have in Gibson's is a disproportionate amount of single detached homes when you look at that in terms of what the actual need and the demand is. In terms of impact, again, this is probably no surprise to anybody, but we have a significant increase in homelessness and people living in unsafe conditions. This includes single working adults and seniors who are on fixed incomes. There's a hollowing out of our community. Many young adults and families are moving off the coast because they can't afford to live here. And this is affecting the workforce. So we have a very critical shortage of workforce, particularly for essential service organizations like the hospital, as well as local businesses. So that's it in a nutshell. Just giving you a picture. I could delve deeper into any one of those areas, but I think that's really a great way of understanding where we're at, I believe, and where we need to move as a community.
Okay, just a quick question. Would this be available on our website?
It can be.
Yeah, I think that's an idea. Maybe if people share their name, are you able to email people this presentation?
Yeah, I can email it. There's also on our website we have the housing needs report, and we have the implementation framework. They're quite thick, and you know they're full of a lot of statistics. This might be more kind of user friendly. Yeah,
consolidated. So we have a community dialogues page on our website, and we'll put a link to this
awesome.
On
okay.
it when you.
The housing needs report actually is on the town website.
That's right.
What would be beneficial is if we could just add your update with the current statistics.
Yes.
Because the full report is already there, and it's sort of primarily featuring the Gibson section, but it would certainly be beneficial to have your recent update.
Absolutely.
Does Cover the Coast publish updates to their website, or is there a newsletter?
We have a newsletter. And just trying to think out the best way. I'm Kelly at coverthecoast.org, so I don't know if you remember that. But I certainly could put you on our newsletter list.
If you just type in Cover the Coast on a Google search, you'd come up.
Yeah.
Mike? Michael?
Oh, is there a homeless count in Gibson?
It's been delayed until, I believe it's going to happen in March.
Yeah, it hasn't been done during the pandemic. The last time it was done was right before the pandemic. And, it was 60-something, I think. Do you have...
The last one?
Yeah.
It was around that, but it's significant.
It's so out of date now.
It's not even worth comparing.
Yeah. And it's Sunshine Coast-wide, too, at Seashell. Right, William?
Kelly, you mentioned the hollowing out of our community by people moving off the coast. Are they being replaced by people moving on, first of all? And secondly, do you have any statistics on how many are moving out? Is it 1% of the population?
I'd have to,
12
I'd
families,
have to
like what?
Follow up on that. There's definitely statistics available around that, and because our population is aging, and there is a migration that is going on right now with young people leaving. We're not unique. I think that's happening in many areas in British Columbia right now because of the cost of housing in particular. But yeah, I could dig that up for you.
I think we hear it most from employers and mm-hmm. organizations. I was just meeting with some representatives from Christensen Village last week, and they said about 60% of their workforce right now, or the people who are working there, are agency workers who come here temporarily because there's no one, there aren't people who can afford to live here who actually work there anymore. And it's the same thing with Vancouver Coastal Health.
Yeah, the hospital.
Probably very similar.
RCMP.
Yeah.
Regional district.
Yeah, the regional district.
Amber?
What's a lock-off suite?
Gaetan could probably explain it to you, but my understanding, I could try. Let me try or bring it.
It's like a secondary suite in a condo. So if you have a three-bedroom condo, in some cases there's going to be two doors to the hallway. One door to the main unit, one door to a bedroom with a bit of a kitchenette. And that's ideal for families where they want an aging parent to live in that unit. So they can come and go as they please. But also, they are connected with the main unit, so it provides support. It's used by older children coming back home because they can't afford housing elsewhere as well.
So would that be in houses as well? Or is that considered to be...
In a house, it would be a secondary suite.
Secondary suite as opposed to...
Or a garden suite in the backyard.
Okay.
Can I just ask about ideas I have now? Or do we have...
Ideas related to this. Sure.
I'm just thinking of the people who are the most vulnerable, of ways to help them immediately, apart from the much bigger idea of development, what happens there. One is with RVs. I have a big driveway in my house. I'd be happy to have somebody park their RV there. It's against the bylaws now, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But can the bylaws not be changed so that we let that happen right away? Either that I put an RV on and would rent it out, or that somebody would bring their RV there and use my services.
It's an interesting one, because when I first started this position, that was one of the first areas that I really focused on. And the struggle that we have is that there's a provincial, the authority is provincial in terms of the safety regulations for living full-time in an RV. And so it's out of the scope of local government to make that call, unfortunately. And it is it's a BC, like a building code that is... an RV is an infringement of. So it's not considered a livable dwelling. And there is a lot of advocacy going on with local government to the provincial government to try and change that, because we are in a crisis right now, and we need to look at it from a harm reduction perspective, and it's a lot safer to live in an RV than to live in a tent.
The Sunshine Coast Regional District actually led a motion at the last UBC Union of BC Municipalities to advocate for that and try to get it. Quite a number of municipalities are working on it.
I see. Yeah, I thought there'd be reasons.
The
other thing is, say, small, tiny homes. I'd love to have a tiny home in my place, but the process of getting it there is far too difficult for me to handle. I would love it if the town got together with builders, as I think happened in Nelson, BC, and provided a number of options that have already been approved, so I could choose from different styles. Obviously, they'd have to.
So templates, like you're saying, for tiny homes, templates?
Absolutely. Make it easy for me to say, yes, I want a tiny home.
Mm-hmm.
Just on the tiny home issue, we do have Pam Robertson.
Yes.
With us this evening, who is with Sunshine Coast Tiny Homes, also Scar of Still Standing. And to the issue of tiny homes, Pam, I believe, has a new certification now which gets her out of the RV classification. And that was one of the problems with tiny homes, because they were classified as RVs. They didn't mesh with zoning and the legislation of living in an RV. So with this new certification, it becomes presumably permissible within a community that you could zone an area to allow tiny homes, which hasn't been possible in the past.
Yep.
And is there anything you can add to that, Pam?
That's not the block, though, for
So I think maybe she's mentioning it's the permitting process itself.
Yeah,
trying to get the approval. So that's
daunting
been,
for me. I can't go into it. Mm-hmm. Because when I went to the town, they said, yeah, you bring in your plans and everything to do with that, and we'll say whether it'll go or not.
And, you know, the interesting thing which was mentioned now, it's with reference to bigger projects. The Premier today announced streamlining some of these processes if they're going to be working positively to create housing. So I think there's an opportunity there that we might find a niche that we could make work. Because right now, as Mayor White said, we're dealing with an OCP which is aged. We're constantly trying to put square pegs in round holes. And we're ending up in this just time-wasting spot zoning that takes a lot of time of staff, it takes a lot of time of committee and council, and it's not solving the problem fast enough. So, you know, streamline, you know, part of what Mayor White referred to is our strategic plan and our OCP, and it's something that really needs to be addressed because right now it's crippling us.
Chris? Just to clarify, because I have a bit of understanding what you're talking about. It's in Nelson and Maple Ridge, what they do is they have a system where you can type in your address and it will tell you if your lot is pre-approved for a laneway home, and then you're able at that time to download one of several pre-approved plans that can go onto your lot. So that is a system that those municipalities institute. It is very time-consuming for my discussions with municipalities that have done that. So. But it is that's what the system I think you're getting at is.
Yeah, the other is sort of creating a simplified document that, in layman's terms, it's Mickey Mouse, the structure and the strategy to be able to put something on your property. So I get a lot of inquiries about, you know, how do we go about this and that, and so I try to simplify. I'm on that property viewer for the SCRD maps, and that's quite extensive knowledge to be able to operate that thing. So I help people with those kind of things. So maybe simplifying and creating, you know, a very easy to read and follow document about all of the steps and stages that somebody that's going in.
And to that point, in Gibson, we only have certain areas that are already pre-zoned for laneway homes and garden suites.
Yeah, so these are, I mean, this discussion is kind of more on infill right now of some of the single family lots that we have, and that connects to Kelly's presentation, and I think also what you were saying, David, about garden suites is I think the last council actually made a motion, and it's going to be at some point there'll be a review of the garden suite area in the town,
and to expand.
And perhaps when you talk about permitting process for garden suites, I think there's a lot of potential to make that a little cleaner and easier as well for infill.
Yeah, so just for the info, there's, you know, places in, I don't know exactly where in BC, but there's allowances for larger homes to be scaled into 2 to 3 suites. So you would be able to take a present building, if it's of a substantial size, and be able to make micro suites, if you want to call it. So right now, the town of Gibson's is restricted to one in-law suite, one garden suite. Would it be impossible to explore having a garden suite and an in-law suite, right? More than one,
That's part of that review. I know it has come up in the past. Yeah,
something that Kelly, mentioned in her report is currently we have this crisis where we're not serving the needs of the community with the type of housing that we need. And one of the things that's coming up, particularly in the Upper Village, is densification. And in order to get that densification, one of the things that's being incurred is height. Both Mayor White and I were at a meeting this morning with the regional district, and they were talking about water needs on the Sunshine Coast. And one of the things they were advocating was densification and multifamily living, because it almost reduces by half water consumption as opposed to the same number of units spread out. So, there's pluses. We get quarterly reports from the fire department, and I also sit on the fire commission. In my term of office, to my knowledge, we've lost 3 firemen in this community because they can't afford to live here anymore.
And to me, that's a horrendous loss, because we spent the money training them, and now we've lost them. And, you know, now we're, you know, trying to recruit new people. They've just started a recruitment of some new members. But, you know, affordable housing is critical. And, you know, Kelly mentioned other areas where it is a problem. So, you know, we need to sort of creatively figure out how we can come up with housing to serve the needs of the community. And in turn, how we meet those needs. And this is where, you know, we're certainly looking for feedback from you, Ms. Dombrowski.
So it sounds to me like the OCP is so out of date, and that's one of the contributing factors to why there is this mismatch with what we have and what we need.
Yep.
And so if the LCP was to be updated, what kind of process is that, and how long does it take?
It's about a 2-year process, probably. I was at a meeting with Mayor Elliott from Squamish, and I was dumbfounded at the meeting, because at this meeting she was announcing all the housing they'd created. And I said, oh my God, how did you do it? Like 300 units of you know, below market affordable rental housing. And she said, David, it took 3 terms. She said, the first term we banged our heads against the wall trying to deal with an outdated OCP. The second term we redid the OCP and rezoned areas. This is solely for rental residential accommodation, pre-zoned. So when a developer came to town, he just said, I'll buy that lot and I can start building. You know, basically all he had to get was a building permit. But it took them 3 terms to get there.
So is there not a way that that could be fast-tracked? I don't know if that's on the plan.
Yeah.
Some kind of schedule for us to start now.
An OCP is a document by tradition that we've had to live with for a long time. As Mayor White said, ours is 17 years old. The last update was 7 years ago.
Not long ago.
So, you know, it is out of step. Currently, like the advisory design panel, everything that's coming to us, it's either a rezoning application, it's, you know, we're trying to put square pegs in round holes.
Wouldn't it make sense to make that the priority?
Well, that's part of this, what Mayor White was saying with the strategic plan, is one of the key things we need to move forward once we have the strategic plan is redoing the OCP. But having said that, there's development permits that also have to be in line with the OCP and bylaws. So it is a complicated process. And, you know, my mom used to say, haste makes waste. So we have to find a comfortable speed we can do it at.
The OCP has got a lot of good elements in it.
Oh, it
so
does.
Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
No.
The problem is, what's causing our problem is that Table 5.1, the land use descriptions on that. That would take about 2 months to revise.
Mm-hmm.
We have the technology. We have all the data from town experts referenced by town staff. That can be done in about 2 months. I've got a GIS guy who will whip that off and give you a model that you could update as variables. We find more water, it increases our capabilities. Less water, it gets reduced. Demographics, it's all that. 2 months.
Well, it's on everyone's dance card that the OCP currently is our stumbling block.
But that needs to be done first. Otherwise, this stuff, the horses are bolting.
And you know, to your point, we're losing people in the community that we desperately need to keep here.
How do you know that?
Well, we get reports, you know, just town staff. When we try and recruit people, finding people who can afford to live here is a huge challenge. The regional district has the same problem.
It's everywhere.
It is everywhere.
It's
everywhere. You know, so how do we create housing in the community that people can afford? That's what we're looking at trying to do.
Well, I have a question for you, Councillor Kroll.
Yes, sir.
Under the Local Government Act and the Community Charter, can you please explain to us what the responsibilities of the town are? And can you quote the sections?
You mean to
what are our responsibilities under the 2 pieces of legislation that we run under? to provide housing in this community?
There is no requirement for us to provide housing in the community.
Thank you.
But we do have the problem, we have community needs. What can we do with the toolbox we have to fulfill the needs to meet, you know, what the community needs to survive? You know, can we live without a fire department? Let's have $1.3 million homes that firemen can't afford.
Well, maybe we should concentrate on the fire department.
And that's something that's on the books, too.
Go ahead.
Thank you. If there's going to be changes made to the OCP, will there be public meetings first?
Well, before, oh, yeah.
At least one.
Yeah.
No, it is very much a public process.
Yeah, it sure is, isn't it?
Mr. Royer.
Questions for the presentation for sure.
Kelly, we're talking about community needs for housing.
Yep.
Are we talking about the community that exists on the Sunshine Coast? Or are we building for people to come to the Sunshine Coast?
Yeah. Good point, Bill.
All I can tell you is that the housing needs assessment was based on an understanding of the population that we have right now in the community and projections of how that population is going to grow. And it's, you know, I think there's assumptions made that there's probably people that are moving here from off coast, but there's also families that are growing and children that are becoming adults and that who want to live here. So it's a mixture of both. It's not written with a vision of what Gibson's is going to be or what are suggesting what Gibson's is going to be. It's based on its best guess at how we are going to grow.
So are the needs to satisfy growth? Because right now we're looking at a situation where most people have housing. No, there's a certain number that don't, but no, most people have housing. But if we're building thousands of new units, presumably that's for immigrants. I shouldn't say immigrants, but people who are moving.
I don't think that's the assumption of the housing needs. I think it really was looking at this, the needs that are in our community as they are right now. Right. And there are a lot of people that are really struggling to that are from here, have lived here most of their life.
Retention.
Yeah.
All my family has moved off the Sunshine Coast.
Yeah, it's
ridiculous.
Significant number also in the housing needs report is the number of people that are living in substandard housing.
Mm-hmm. I can think of an example.
I wouldn't mind making a comment about this very thing. I think our vision of what do we want Gibson's to look like demographically? Do we want it to be a white aging population, or do we want to attract our families who left to come back? And with that vision, that should direct what we want in housing. And that's why I think, you know, the tiny homes or the lock-off suites, the condos, affordable condos, will bring a lot of those people back. But I think most of us who have kids who went through the school system here and are finished know somebody who had to leave because they couldn't afford it. You know, Prince Rupert is a place where a lot of Sunshine Coast kids have gone. Well, I think we should be trying to attract them to come back. And if they know, if their families are telling them these are available to you, they'll come back.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think the point you raised too is it's not just people leaving, it's that we're aging.
Yes.
we're aging. I mean, I luckily own a house, and I used to be was fortunate to be able to buy a house when I was in my 20s. That's impossible now. Mm-hmm. Like, that's impossible in Gibson's now. And lucky me, I'm a homeowner, but the generation coming up now, there's no shot to be a homeowner anytime soon.
I think Julia brought up a really good point. But housing, this is where this whole land use planning is an interdisciplinary. Housing alone won't attract them back. They also have to have employment. There's so many more things. We can't just plan in silos. We have to, just like we can't plant Upper Gibsons without including Lower Gibsons, mm-hmm. because the more population you put in Upper Gibsons, or the more units, you have to take those away from somewhere to make sure we keep that sustainable balance.
And there's a lot of jobs here that are unfilled.
Oh, that's for sure.
So, yeah. Everywhere, though.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
So it's got to be this greater holistic plan.
Ricardo? Mm.
Yeah, just a question. I heard that one of the comments mentioned about thousands of new houses or apartments or thousands of new units. And I mean, I don't know the scale. I would like to know if you have the numbers of really how many units we are talking about for the next 3-4 years, because I don't think it will be thousands or 3,000 units that we are talking about. But I don't know, it's a question.
Well, another frustration we talk about at council a lot is how long it takes to build these. Like, you know, the going back to, 8 years ago now? I'm thinking of the affordable housing on Shaw Road. I mean, the discussions for that started 8 years ago. Now, how far off are we now? Now the shovel's in the ground.
Yeah, the footings poured and all that. Yeah, but that spoke a lot to the shortage of employees here. And that was one of the issues when we were creating the bids for it. We simply didn't have people offering to bid on certain aspects of the job. And that speaks to the labor shortage here in Gibson's.
Right, there's a great project to provide housing for seniors who would like to get out of the big home where they're rattling around like a BB in a boxcar, get into something where they can downsize, and again, the contractor is struggling to even get quotes because the subcontractors haven't got the crew. And quotes these days are like good for 2 weeks if you're lucky.
And it should be noted that we're not actually the government. We're a nonprofit from community members. So when you look at those timelines.
Yeah, in defense of that, David Crawford, BC Housing, said all affordable housing projects take 8 years to get off the ground.
Yep.
So that's not very unusual.
And it was on the news this evening, exactly what you said, Pam, is the length of time it takes to get affordable. You have to get so many moving pieces in line to make it happen.
Gaetan, you've been waiting a while to...
Yeah. I'd like to go back to the ideal OCP. I think the Upper Gibsons area, Gibsons Way from school, not quite to Henry, but before that, along that stretch, there's a lot of density that's been planned 15 years ago and reinforced 7 years ago. So there's a lot of parcels on both sides that have single-story commercial business. In some cases, there's vacant lots, and there's a lot of density that's permitted on those particular parcels. So I'm not sure the OCP is a stumbling block. There's a few elements in the OCP that are the multifamily is limited to 4 stories, and nobody wants to or can build 4 stories. If you're going to go, if you're going to put an elevator in the building, you need 6 stories. So, and if you keep that OCP with that number, you're not going to be able to get investment. So that means the spot changes to the OCP, or having the community involved, is it time to change that number? But I don't think that's an overall rewrite of the OCP. When you look at the map, it's pretty typical of a town that wants to grow responsibly and have the density where the services are, where the road is the same width as Hastings Street and Burnaby with left turn lanes and so on. So I think it makes sense. Your OCP is pretty darn good.
Yeah. And to your point, sir, you know, the zoning that is currently in place for a lot of these areas, which is C1, which is ground floor commercial residential above, in this climate to get the performa to work financially, it's requiring the height variance.
That's correct.
To get enough units into the project that it makes it viable, that they can keep it affordable. And that's what really the crux of this meeting is. As a community, how do you feel about six-story buildings in the Upper Village along Gibson's Way? And that's what it boils down to. You know, we at the ADP meeting last week, one of the projects that we had before us, great project, visually it was really great looking, but it was, you know, going to the limits of what was allowable on the lot and with a height variance. And the panel, comprised of architects, landscape architects, people in the community, their comment was, we would rather see the building go taller and have a smaller footprint, have a little air around it.
So for that, what amenities is the town going to expect from the developer for that density bonusing?
Well, it's not a density bonusing, sir, because there is no density limit in it. Where we can get a little wiggle room is in what can we get as a trade-off for the variance for height. What they're looking for in one of these projects is a reduction in parking. To that end, the developers offered to buy...
It's a huge reduction of parking.
Here we go.
The developers offered to buy two cars for the car share co-op, to provide memberships to the residents who don't have parking for the co-op. You know, the building is walkable to almost everything. Within our bylaw, we're requiring 1.5 spaces per unit. Do we need 1.5 cars per unit?
Yeah.
So if you reduce it to one car per unit, then the variance they're asking for parking is not that great.
You need the 1.5.
At the back of the room?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Not everybody can walk. I understand what you're saying about where you're thinking of going and how it's close to amenities. Not everybody can do that. And if you work outside of a few blocks of where you live, you need a car to get to Sea Shelter, to get to the doctor, or to get to the ferry. Parking is, I think, a really serious consideration in what you're planning.
So a couple things. First of all, I don't think anybody's really against having additional housing on the coast. I think we all see that we need it. It's going to be required now, and it's going to be required in the future. My question is kind of twofold. Do we have the basic infrastructure in place now to handle the additional people moving in, the additional development? And I'm not talking just infrastructure and water. I'm talking sewer, transportation, parking, recreational facilities.
Right on.
You know, one thing Silas mentioned at the very beginning, what are we missing in this room tonight? I know we all feel young, but we're all the young people with the families that keep this community vibrant. Where are they?
Right here.
They're not here.
They're here. Hi, how's it going?
Exactly. And we appreciate
single
you coming.
Single mom over here, you know?
Yeah. You're well represented.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it is a valid point, sir. One of the comments that we came up with with respect to one of these projects is where is the communal living amenity space? And it's decidedly absent. That's not to say it couldn't be created. But, you know, this is what, you know, we want the feedback, you know. And I totally agree. You know, young people in this community, you know, we're desperately trying to attract them back. Anne Marie?
Yeah, I think I can see on the consensus here that we have a need, but we will densify in Upper Gibson. It's the logical thing. I think, and we are talking about infrastructure. And there's the rush, okay, OCP takes 2 years, but at the end of the day, we need to think, because everything is related. So if we try to spot zone, we may solve one problem and create others. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, and everybody comes with proposals, I can do and that, but we need to think through. I agree with the parking. It's easy to think, we don't need
listen.
Car.
But we're here to listen. Just remember.
What about the school?
Well, it's just something that I hear all the time. We don't need parking, but at the end of the day, we don't have incredible transit, and the fact that the coast is really longitudinal, for example, we need. So these are the things that makes me think that we need an OCP before we start talking.
So we're listening to everyone else tell us that.
It's called engagement.
I move here from North Vancouver.
Good for you.
Did anybody live over there in the last 10 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why did you move over here?
Too dense now.
Too dense. The infrastructure was not kept up.
The traffic
became a ridiculous place to live.
I'm going to just skip to the traffic. Watch what you wish for.
Yeah.
We talk about it all the time, and I've sat in council meetings in North Vancouver.
North Vancouver is a good example of what not to do.
Let me just finish here.
Let this gentleman speak.
Yeah. So, again, watch what you wish for. Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of alternatives. Slow down. Think about your alternatives for the long term. If you think the short term, you're going to be in big trouble.
Are you thinking of something specific?
No, that's a general comment because it is a problem. Cars and traffic are a problem. And I came from it. I've watched it. I've lived in the Lower Mainland my whole life and in different parts of it. And I loved North Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
My kids loved it. I got out of there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it is a freaking mess because it got out of control.
Yeah, I think we're all worried about traffic. The more traffic, more cars, more everything. Somebody raised a point a few minutes ago, though, about what about schools for the young people you want to attract. My understanding of it was when my kids were for the elementary school, that the department that looks after that doesn't build a new school until the need is there, which means kids are sharing computers, sharing textbooks, that's around. So that's something that has to, where does the money come from for that? I think the schools have to be taken into consideration as well.
Aren't there three portables at Gibson's Elementary right now?
At brand new school.
Someone now over in the couch, you've been putting up your hand for a while. Yeah.
I just have 2 points. One, everyone is making very valid comments, especially about the OCP. Councillor Coleman mentioned how would we feel about six stories lining Gibson's Way coming up. I think what has to be, first and foremost, we have to keep in sight is we do not want to obstruct the beautiful view of what makes Gibson so gorgeous. So if we're going to have density on Gibson's Way, we still need to be able to see the mountains, the ocean, and all of that. So it's planning that's done responsibly and carefully for density, keeping our natural
assets.
Yes, thank you. And my second point is critical infrastructure. When we talk about developers looking to provide us with something as an exchange for density, I think we do need to talk about our sewer system. I live in Lower Gibson's, I smell it. So we have a problem with our sewer system. I think that they need to be contributing to actual infrastructure that we need, whether it's a sewer system, emergency management. Our fire hall doesn't have a backup generator. There's things that we could get these developers to provide for us that would benefit the whole community, especially when it comes to emergency preparedness. Those are my two comments.
David?
Hello, David. One of the things that I'm concerned about is lift charges or lack of them. And as you know, when you rezone something or you change the variance or whatever, we increase the value of the land. And in Vancouver, typically, that increase, that lift in value that's created by council is taxed at the rate of 75 to 25 for the town. I don't see anything in this discussion which is creating value in terms of the town treasury, which we're going to need if we're going to provide
other affordable housing, or we're going to need to find other infrastructure. I look at what happened on Eagle Crest and the lack of contribution of that development compared to what the lift was. And I just really hope that in any planning that is done, is we consider what the lift is that is being generated by these variances and zoning enhancements. And I looked through the report that was put together by staff, and not one report that I saw estimated what the change in value of the raw land would be if the enhancements were provided that are being requested. And I think it's an important issue. I think we need to very much consider how we create value for the town, how, for its treasury, so it can build the roads, do the sewers, do whatever else is necessary, without taxing the existing residents to such an extent that they can't afford to live here.
If I can perhaps shed some light on the on that point, and I unfortunately I don't have a Gibson's example. I have a Seashelt example. We're developing for a client 5 acres in Seashelt, and one of the issues that came up during public consultation is the road is in bad shape, and maybe we need more water. We're going to be providing, that owner is going to be provide $2 million in development cost charges that are applied off-site. So we're going to build a new road and turn it over to the district. We're going to build a new sidewalk on that, on the road that people think is substandard. So we're going to improve it. And then they have $2 million to apply to drill new wells and to do whatever they want with the sewer system, existing projects of the town. So development pays for itself, pays for all the work, the frontage work, fix the roads around the site, and then provide money. That if that money was not provided by the developers, it would be the taxpayers that have to pay for the sewers and all the upgrades. So if those sewers are in bad shape today, maybe it's because there was not enough development, and development cost charges paid for to help with that.
And just for clarification to your point, Keaton, what you're referring to is development cost charges.
That's right. Yeah.
So there were the DCCs were
there's
an additional
referring to million? Is sorry.
Well, I just the DCCs were an additional $2 million that were off-site. Those weren't amenities. Those weren't amenities.
No, they were not amenity contributions. Okay. They're development cost charges to help with upgrades to utilities and infrastructure. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And but to David's point that, you know, if there is an area where we can ask for a community amenity payment.
We're providing that as well for that project in Seashell. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
But it just seems as if we've done a lot of projects.
Sadly, David, the train has left the station on some of those projects.
Of course.
Where there was an opportunity where we perhaps could have received more.
So,
there's more trains in the station right now.
Now we've got some new trains sitting in the station, and we need to look at them. And what we
lock it down.
But, in some cases when when you're just getting a variance for height, it doesn't, although it's in allowing them to increase density, they're not getting a density lift per se in the general context of the word.
It doesn't trigger the community amenities policy, which other
you?
Other
you're
developments
get a ton
do.
Of view up there.
A great
but that's
point.
Lift. There's a huge view.
Yeah. And that works for the project with
sorry,
its upper unit
you can't see
to become...
Leanne's got her hand up a lot there.
It
but it's
allows
to be
the project...
In there.
It allows the cost of the project to be offset by the higher rents that they can get for those view properties to allow more affordable units and lower levels. Leanne?
No, I just wanted... David's point, I think, is exceedingly well taken. Also that... we do not have a zoning bylaw for properties that are taller than 4 floors. And I believe we must have a zoning bylaw in place before approving buildings that are taller than four floors for residential use.
And this is,
yeah,
this is what they're asking for, is a variance to the existing bylaw.
That's not a variance. I'm talking about a rezoning specifically to buildings taller than four floors, because there are a lot of safety and social and economic factors that come into play when you live in a building that requires an elevator, and that elevator will be automatically shut off in the case of any emergency. It means that people have to safely exit the building. Children that have to be able to go down stairwells that are taller than four floors. Children that may weigh 60 or 70 pounds, and not all adults can carry them. You know, that's one thing. There are all the social things that need to happen to allow children to live comfortably and have places to play, places to study. For the residents to have places that they can share a social life together to some extent or another as they choose. There are criteria around all of those things that make it possible in most of the urban areas in D.C., and for families to live at higher densities, and those guidelines are simply missing. And I think if we go ahead and start putting in high-rise buildings, they are not a variance. They are a rezoning, for starters. To call it a variance, to me, is misleading and inappropriate. It needs to be a rezoning, and we need to have the criteria in place before the rezoning is done, not come along after and say, wow, we really missed an opportunity here to benefit our community. And so I think we really need to think about the benefits that these buildings could have for our community and come to some agreement, and also come to some agreement about where they need to be located and how that can be of benefit to the community first, and then we can go ahead and begin the process. But I think we're kind of putting the cart before the horse at this point.
Absolutely. To piggyback on that, we should be aware that
William, we've got a couple people with their hands up.
Our fire department doesn't really have the capability of handling a six-story building here.
Mark?
I count myself as one of the younger people here tonight.
And Al, I've got you next.
There's no doubt.
I'm worried about your arm.
That's a workout. Yeah.
There's no doubt this, from this crowd, that the consensus is that the OCP needs to be reworked, as our zoning bylaws also need to be reworked. We have to increase our density. We are on the cusp of $1 million liability associated with our upgrade to our police department. If we do not increase our density, our only objective at that point would be to annex properties outside of Gibson's and call those Gibson's. Not sure how people would think about that at Grantham's, but it's probably the logical way to
with
go.
Force,
is to go as far as West Seashelt and annex the entire property. And because we're all drawing from the same resources, and I'm speaking of water in that regard. So when we look at this as a rezoning exercise and a development of what the community looks like in 25 years from now, where the high rises are going to be and where the single family dwellings and where the industrial areas are, that needs to start today. We need to start looking at what it's going to look like in 25 years. There's been some mistakes made over the years. There's been some fighting about what's going on down and having a 12-story building down in Lower Gibson's. As this gentleman just pointed out, there's no possible way that our fire department could do that, could do anything with a 12-story building. David, do you know what our fire department is capable of servicing right now?
Their maximum is 6 stories.
6 stories,
correct.
Then we already know our limit. So the discussion here tonight is all that great, and I think that's identified two key points that our OCP and zoning needs to be revisited and today.
And just, sorry, Mr.
Thank you.
You know, we have had dialogue with the fire department exactly with this. Currently, their ladder truck will reach 6 stories. You know, but yes, it is. It's very much on the radar.
So, how high is 6 stories?
In
story is 65.
60 feet.
Roughly in feet.
And how tall is the George supposed to be? 120 feet.
121.
Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
74 on the Gallon Point side.
All good.
74 feet on the Gallon Point side.
Right now, what we're discussing is the upper village. the other categories for the moment. And then, you know, it's, you know, a valid point. We have regular conversations. Any new project that comes before planning goes to the fire department for their feedback. And it's one of the big things that, you know, people ask for variances on setbacks. And one of the big concerns of the fire department is exactly that, being able to get between buildings to be able to deal with the problem.
I guess my question is...
Well, Bill hasn't spoken much. We'll get you out next. Go ahead.
I just wanted to highlight on the lady over here and her comment about 4 stories and 6 stories.
Yeah.
So they, okay. And it's a... the reason for that, that's the only thing that... that justifies that 6-story is that what's called a floor space ratio that the developers are hanging their hat on. And it's out of whack. One of our, and I like to use the words ours, not yours or theirs, and then we're all in this together. So she identified in a report that the FSR, the floor space ratio, is out of whack. And it was one of the best reports I'd ever seen. And this also goes to what David was saying about these massive expensive gentrification type buildings. That's tied to the floor space ratio. It's out of whack, it's part of the OCP, and it needs to be corrected before we go any further. And it's been said time and time and time again here. The OCP is our land use plan, and it's out of date.
And
before we can do anything else, that's got to be updated.
Go ahead, Bill.
Every summer here, for the last little while, I watch all the water problems in the regional district, and I see in Gibson's we're asked to go to different stages of water conservation, and I wonder, have we a sustainable plan? And do we have a sustainable plan that meets zero pollution levels or equilibrium? To me, that, you know, all this development, what is the cap? We have a water license. Mm-hmm. When do we butt up against that? Can we get a new water license? We're now competing with the regional district for access to the Gibson's aquifer. So to me, I guess that's the question I have. What is the sustainable amount of people that...
Not necessarily yet. we were just at a water meeting earlier, and they didn't put up any projects that we're trying to drill into our aquifer. So that was good news today.
To your point, sir, we do have a... Currently, we have an application in with respect to well 6 to increase our capacity to draw water. And a little clarification, the province asked us this past summer if we would go to a higher conservation stage so we'd be in a position to be able to give the regional district more water if they needed it. The situation we got into the previous year, we gave the regional district water, and we got into a situation where we exceeded our current license pumping limit. So they told us if we did it again, we potentially could be fined. Which they asked us on one hand to give water, but on the other hand, slap your wrist for doing it. You know,
but we've got a water license since then. Now it's no problem.
And the facility in Ocean Run is nearing completion. And the capacity of that well currently exceeds the other 4 wells.
Okay.
But to the point, the report we've had from Waterline with respect to what's potentially in the aquifer mapping, they're suggesting a population cap of about 10,000 with our current existing water supply.
Well, but
also
it wasn't quite that way. It was tested for 10,000.
Tested.
Yeah,
for 10,
I mean, it was the 10,000 is the build out that they were asked to test
based on the current
yeah.
consumption.
And they did determine it could be sustainable at 10,000.
And I believe, just for clarification, the Church Road well, there are monitoring wells in association with that. And if we discover that it's impacting on our license, their license will be affected by it because the terms, the conditions they were allowed to put in that well was that it wouldn't impact on an existing supply to the community. So there is a checks and balance in that.
That's a church well that I'm thinking of.
Yeah. Colin?
So our housing needs assessment and the most recent census data suggests that renters are being disproportionately disadvantaged by our affordability crisis. What percentage of the new proposed units in Upper Gibsons will be dedicated rental versus those that are being designed for home ownership?
Currently, we have one project which is 68 units. The developer it's gone from rental to it'll be what the market determines when they get their occupancy permit. Another project, they have agreed to rental in perpetuity. We've had issues where we've tried to put covenants on development to say it'll be rental for 20 years or 40 years. A couple of developers have said, if you put a covenant on it, I'll build what I'm allowed to build within the current OCPM zoning. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
that's it. We need rentals.
Well, I agree, we need rentals. But already we've had two projects pulled in the community where we said we put covenants on them for rental, and they pulled the projects.
Sir?
I was just about to ask that exact question that Colin just asked. Could we be more specific? And when we say Upper Gibsons, do we mean like Heritage Playhouse level, not School Road? So School Road would not be considered Upper Gibsons?
No, for clarification to my mind, would be from School Road, North Road,
sure.
Heading towards Seashell.
Okay, so can we be a little bit more specific about what plans, because what I know right now is Farnham, right, that development, where the Irwin Hotel, and Gospel Walk. So what other projects, or what specifically projects are we talking about?
Well, the one you mentioned, which is the old Irwin property, that's one of the projects. The Sunnycrest Motel is another property.
That's what I meant by the Irwin.
There's 718 North Road, the project that Mr. Royer referred to. There has been conversation with the Legion to redevelop their property.
And what about
the gray zone?
Gospel Rock is being thrown in with this too?
No. Gospel Rock is, it's in the upper village, sort of, in quotation marks, but right now.
And also the O'Shea on that.
The affordable housing unit on
right.
Ship. You mean the one on
Eagle Crest.
Okay, well, what we're talking about now is just from School Road, North Road, towards Seashell.
Okay.
Yep. And there are some other possibilities.
Where we come in.
Shaw Road
is wrong.
No.
You mean the affordable housing on Shaw Road? It's currently been approved. They have their building permit.
Okay, so that's another project to add in.
It's coming.
And it's rental.
And I we're all aware of all the development going on, and my major concern is I don't want to look backwards, but it just seems that a lot of the stuff that's come down the pipe that the town has been approving, we're not getting a whole lot for it.
No.
We're not getting a lot of amenities for it.
Nothing. Zero.
And that's And that's looking backwards, but it's looking backwards, though, with clarity. And that's got to stop. We got to start getting stuff from the developers. Because if it's going to be coming down the pipe, we got to get something for it.
Can I say a word here?
Yes.
So I'm an outsider. I'm an investor, developer, and I'm interested in the area. I work with Gaytan often. And I'm thinking, you know, you're asking a lot about, you know, what is the developer bring the table for us?
I didn't know there was better lighting.
Make some loud bugs.
No, it's okay. Topics.
Keep going.
Okay, so I guess what I'm thinking is that for us to invest and to do the things that we do, you know, obviously if we don't have the density, it's not viable for us in terms of investment. Okay. And if we're doing rental accommodation, our payback is over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. So you can only go so far as a developer and build so many units and put so much out there in order to make it viable and to make it work. So if I'm hearing from the community correctly, it's the number one has been identified by yourself as we need rental accommodation, and certainly we want to look at projects that are going to provide that. First and foremost is a rental. That being said, we need the density in order to make that happen. So you're looking for concessions from the developer. What are you going to do for us? And if we can provide rental opportunities, then you get your police department back, you get your fire department back, you get the people that are working in the community back. So what's in it for you? Maybe you get your town back.
Yeah.
Chicken or the egg.
Well, maybe there's a balance.
Which one comes first? That's the question.
Absolutely.
And that's
there is
what's
a balance.
Happening here.
There
which
is a
what
balance.
Comes first?
But right now, it's all about, I hate to say this dirty word, but it's all about money.
It is.
Okay? Yeah. It's all about money. But it wants somebody, you want somebody to come in and spend the money. Somebody's got to. And so you don't know me, but if I'm going to come and spend the money, right? I want to solve the biggest problem first.
It is actually just for a point of information. It is that we had we've had so few purpose-built rentals in the town over the years that it's actually in our affordable housing policy now to encourage rentals. Like it's actually that's something that. For if a development were to come, and we did have leverage on them to in the OCP to when they're building market housing, they could actually offer rentals to meet our affordable housing policy. That's how in need the town has been of rentals in recent years. That was a change that was made about 5 years ago.
I see fear that they're not going to take these opportunities to move up and forward as this big explosion. When if you've, in the last 8 or 10 or 12 or 15 years, you've seen these little tiny increments. And I don't see as an investor...
50 years.
Okay. Okay. I don't see as an investor all of a sudden this 1,000 units are going to come in and just... you know, inundate the town. I don't see that, to be honest with you.
No.
Maybe a few hundred over the next 5 or 6 years.
We talk about market saturation sometimes, Leanne, right? Yeah, like you always ask me, what's the latest market? It's really low.
It's going to take.
We sell like 25 units a year or something here.
Yeah,
or 30.
That's
or
just my perspective as an investment. So.
Other than the 3 units.
And thank you for that. For providing that, I needed to hear that.
Yeah,
okay.
Good perspective.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Wanda hasn't spoken.
Yeah, just one of the statistics that Kelly, you didn't really talk about, and that is the census tells us who's here, but they also give you an income. What is the average income of people in on the coast here? And and I'm particularly interested in this word affordability. When you look at what the average wage is for, say, an ordinary person on the coast, these wages are fairly low. Mm-hmm. And one of those, back in 2015, when Urban Matters did their very first study, they included that. And that was a very important step, because what that did was it encouraged nonprofits to come in to provide affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the town has done a very good job of seeking out. There's other, I mean, the Kiwanis people have come from the North Shore, have come to build here, and there was other opportunities to build. What I'm concerned about is that, yes, we demand rentals, but at what cost? I mean, are the people who actually live here, who are going to come here and work at your regular retail job, going to be able to afford the rentals that come here? And I think that that is a consideration that we really must, it's a stat we really have to look at.
Can I say something to that one? That's a federal issue. Like, all we can do is put a municipal band-aid on that.
It's all federal.
This is all federal. Like, we're stuck between a rock and a hard place.
But it's also supply and demand.
I agree. So for the past 8 years, like, I was a single mom, right? So I left my person with a leaf blower and a train table.
Okay.
Off I go, right? I spent an entire year looking for a rental. Couldn't find one. Nobody would rent to me. Nobody. So I bought a trailer in Poplars. I fixed it up. I flipped it. Right? Like, I saw way back when that if I didn't get my shit together and work like 8 jobs, mm-hmm. I was going to have to leave my kid here with my ex. Scariest position in my life. And I've kept up on it the whole time. So basically, as a landlord now, your rentals are doctors. You get to choose between a doctor, a nurse, mm-hmm. a lawyer, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the people that are going to be able to afford the rentals.
But those are the people you need.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's true. The market.
You also need someone to say, "How may I help you?"
Yeah.
It's going back to the continuum of housing.
We have people that need to. Those people need somewhere to live too.
Mm-hmm.
And just to those people, one of the things that we're dealing with is with some of these projects that are moving forward. What happens to the people that are displaced by those projects? Which is another big concern,
mm-hmm.
because there's people. How many people? Just a quick question.
Yeah.
How many people in this room have walked through the Irwin property?
I have.
Walked through the Irwin property.
Right to the very back.
To the very back.
Yeah. I have friends in there.
I know people in there as well, but
yeah.
I find it horrifying that there are people in this community. We refer to our, we're all proud and protect our seaside community, and it's friendly, and it's all this. But there are people that have having to live like that in our community. And, they're being offered space, first right of refusal in the new project by the same developer that's, coming, I think they're supposed to get their occupancy permit in March or April. But have you looked at the application for rental?
They're not going to be able to afford
it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, one out of 25 is lined up.
To Mr. Yannick's comment, it's not the community's responsibility to provide housing. But we have to, encourage people who are willing to come into our community, who are willing to spend money. Yes, on the 6th and 7th floor, or 5th and 6th floor, there may be view rentals that, you can rent market or above. But hopefully within the project, as with one of the proponents, they're bringing units, they were bringing 33% of the units affordable or below.
Subsidizing.
Anyways, just to be clear,
the number...
I didn't say that. I asked what the responsibility of the municipality was under the legislation. I did not say anything else.
Okay.
Other than that.
But
it was a question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Al!
Yeah.
How's you're using your other arm now?
Yeah, I'm going to start using his.
One arm bandit.
Great.
Okay, back the Waterline report, excellent report, love their work. Yep. Basically, it's a low to moderate risk for a population build-out of 10,000. That equates to about 4,500, 4,600 dwelling units to build up. That's our sustainable capacity. We are already at 24 current. There's about another 850 that are in construction already, like Eagle View and stuff like that, and our permit have development permits. So then that's going to equate now to, if that gets built out in this census term, that's about 1,800 people. Mm-hmm. So guess who's going to be paying, you know, RCMP bills? But that 4,500, that 4,600 units has to be distributed. Mm-hmm. It can't go over. Somebody mentioned balance. That's our balance. That's our sustainability. You put more over here, it's less over there. So that's land management planning.
And that goes back to the OCP.
Thank you.
Land OCP use evaluation.
Right, yeah.
So it's what I hear. It's like we do have the statistics. We do have a lot of understanding of the situation. What we need is just to sit and plan according to our needs. And this, to me, translates into OCP amendment, planning with the community. Because we do have. I think what happened is we don't do the OCP amendment, and now we are just, okay, this person is going to do some dance. Let's do it. But it's like Leanne said, it's not, we are opening a can of worms with the six-story building right now because we don't have the zoning. Mm-hmm. We don't even understand the needs. We would need to get this first before approving. Mm-hmm. So what are we doing? Why don't we do the work, the right work that we need to do now? Just do the OCP plan with all this input, with the community. We have the sustainability, the limits. We already know where to go.
We have 22 more minutes. You think we could do it in 20 minutes? Amber.
So do we have any clue really what the provincial government might do once we get the housing needs report done?
Well, the report's done.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
so,
how often do we need to update it now?
I think it has to be updated in 2024 again,
yeah,
I believe.
Terrifying.
Yeah. So it basically comes down to the community to take the recommendations, because out of that came recommendations, like specific recommendations for local government and for not-for-profit. So that's why we have a housing action table, you know, to really come together as opposed to working in silos and be more integrated. But there's work to be done. We need to, land use evaluation is one of the top ones. And so understanding what property we have on the coast that could potentially be used for specific types of housing, and just be really smart about how we go about it. And then there's a huge advocacy piece around getting funding from both provincial and federal government for that.
Jody.
Yeah, I'm just wondering maybe more towards Kelly is, how do you target the new housing so that the people who you want to have it will get it? Like it's not just to do with the low market rental, which you could have an application process for, but all of that market housing, like there's six stories and one of them will be non-market and the other four are supposedly going to help solve our housing problems on the coast. But they could all be gobbled up by investors from off-coast or people moving here from off-coast because it's a very appealing place to live and it does nothing for our housing crisis here on the coast. Is there any mechanisms that are being used to
well, if
ensure
it's,
that to be the case?
Quite often there's partnerships between the developer and a not-for-profit. So if there's subsidized housing or below market housing, there's you know, opportunities for the nonprofit to either purchase those units, and then they would be ultimately in control in terms of managing them and deciding ultimately who uses them. So that's one avenue. From a non-for-profit perspective, we're working really hard to do as much as we can to develop our own inventory and to look at what we have even on in the community, what we call purpose-built rentals, and purchase those. And so they start to become the inventory of the not-for-profit community.
I guess I was thinking more about the for-profit component of those projects. Like, I think at the end of the day, we somebody is probably going to give up some privacy in their home or other aspects of going bigger, close to existing homes. Is some existing residents will pay the cost for that at some level. And it'd be nice to see that we are getting what we think from these projects. I think especially about the second of the two proposals, which is not, in my view, providing the town with very much. It'll provide a bunch of condos, maybe some rental. Mm-hmm. They don't look like very livable units. There's like zero amenity space in them. It just doesn't seem like what we need. And part of me would like the town to not decide on these thinking they're going to solve a crisis when we won't even have these for 2 or 3 years. When the crisis solutions are probably more like telling your bylaw officer to look the other way with the RV parked in someone's driveway. I think they're really different issues. I would really like to see the immediate actions to help the crisis people who are in desperate need, who are just living in the forest or some other situation, and think of these other projects as a bit more long-term. They're not going to solve our crisis today or tomorrow. It's going to be years down the road. And treat it that way.
It is good to look at it as a continuum, and there is a lot of work that is underway. I mean, it's early stages, and it's a deep and difficult issue to solve. Around homelessness and around deep affordability for people, which is ultimately what we need. But there's work going on in that area. I do think we have to understand, though, that there is what they call the missing middle in terms of affordability for ownership and entry level for ownership for people to be able to build equity and to be able to get into these smaller units. So, I don't have the answer. But.
So can I just add a little bit to that in the description of living in the driveway in an RV or a tiny house, per se? I didn't delegate to the town of Gibson's just because of densification and there isn't a lot of land space in the town of Gibson's if you really want to look at it, a perspective of having like an additional temporary dwelling on a land space. It is a short-term band-aid solution for an immediate problem. I delegated a pilot project to the regional district in 2018. It's been sitting there collecting dust ever since. I've delegated twice over since that's happened. It's basically a temporary use permit with the ability of people to be able to reside temporarily. It was a 3-year plan just to kind of see how it worked. How it was divided was 100 RVs, or they call them movable structures, just to kind of get out of that whole specifics. It was over a 3-year term, 100 homes, or 20 homes per electoral area, 5 electoral areas. So it would have been 100 homes over 3 years, 300 homes. We would have surpassed that by now. That's 300 additional undisplaced people. We would be moving into the 4th year right now. So that being said, it's a very small, sort of temporary and non-committal solution. Something that the town of Gibson's might want to consider. We went down to parking, we went down to all the finite details, exit strategy. I can get you that information if you'd like, but it's just something to be able to give peace of mind to some people. It's already happening in the town of Gibson's. It's sporadic. It's either front and center or it's a school bus in Davis Bay. We have it happening. What it would do is buy some time. It would be a temporary situation to an immediate crisis, and it would give peace of mind and some sanity to some people out there who are really struggling, primarily the people that are going to be displaced out of the early, because there already are RVs in there.
You'd need a piece of land, though, right?
It's individual properties.
Oh, okay, you mean infill. Yeah.
Integration versus segregation, right? Because these big 6 stories are segregation. It's putting the demographic in a spot. Mm-hmm. This is integration, which... If you learn about integration and societal needs, when you host somebody who's in a critical or a sensitive situation, you actually are giving them a hand up, and you're helping them to become...
Yeah, it's inclusion.
It's an inclusion, and you're helping them to integrate and to want to be participant in a community, right? So you look at the Netherlands and you look at places like this where they actually intentionally put seniors with young families and vice versa. And they put an intentional grouping and gathering of people so that there's prosperity and abundance and generosity. So kind of when we're talking about looking at the balance and the holistic part of things, those are the kind of things that we can do as a community, you guys can do with having some power at B without it committed and in a temporary way. So you're not saying that this is forever, but you're telling, you know, negative Nancy next door that doesn't want to have an RV that it's just a temporary use permit. Temporary use permit, and it's for a period of time.
Yeah.
It's not going to be there forever. They're not going to be stockpiling all of their personal belongings and creating all of these lean-tos and shelters.
Well,
like right now,
work for middle class family.
No,
that's the thing.
Like, no, but I'm just saying it's
yeah.
a possible solution.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you.
Two quick things. One of them is that I 1,000% support what Pamela, what you just said. And I would really like to encourage our current town council to just contemplate and consider temporary use, putting people into, allowing people to live in an RV. I hear what you're saying, that it's out of your jurisdiction or other safety issues or whatever, but it sure beats living under a tarp up in the forest. The other thing I wanted to mention or ask you about is when you're thinking about changing the OCP, how far into the future are you thinking of putting things in place? In our, like, do you have a vision of where we will be 25 years from now and then incrementally start stepping into that? So we'll do a new OCP now, and that's what we're going to do for the next 5 years, but it's blending into our long-term vision.
OCP is long term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The strategic plan is like 5 years. Yeah. But an OCP is a planning document that's long term.
But you are, so you do see 20 years down the road, not just stop at 5 and
yeah.
then do a new one.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, the OCP that was last done in 2000.
15.
Yeah, well, that was the update, but the update on, I mean, it was originally done 2005. That was supposed to go 20 years down the road, and here we you need to update it.
Yeah.
If a good portion of these new homes that are being proposed in Upper Gibsons will not be dedicated rental, but will instead be up for home ownership, are there conversations at the town right now considering asking the province to be included in the speculation of vacancy?
Yep.
Got a point to put down?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. You know people.
And,
yeah.
Colin, just for clarification, of the projects that are currently on the books, like Shaw Road is rental. The Irwin property, we don't know because we had asked for a covenant on it and the developer said it'll be what it is when the market comes because he wouldn't build it if there was a covenant. The property, the proposed development on Sunnycrest property, they've agreed to rental in perpetuity and a covenant registered on title with respect to them. Mr. Evans?
Thank you. There's a number of issues that were discussed. One is affordable housing and the other one is just rental. And currently our zoning bylaw does not permit in some areas for single family dwellings to be cut and divided into a rental suite down below. If that was to happen, there needs to be, the need is specific criteria for that, such as individual parking, individual area for an outside area for that person to be as a rental. And I wonder how many rental units you would get if you were to give that zoning bylaw passed tomorrow, how many developments would come in and have a suite available. I refer to back to the argument that was developed by the Airbnb taking short-term, long-term rentals away, that there was no criteria set up for the short-term rentals. There's no private parking, there's no private area outside, there's none of this criteria associated with a dwelling It's simply a place where you can walk in. It may be on-street parking, and it doesn't benefit the neighbors, or in fact, it harms the neighbors. So when we're looking at this kind of thing, we have to look at the big picture, and the big picture is that we have to, I'm sorry, I'm rambling here, we have to increase our density. We know that. We have to do it rapidly, and we have to give citizens the ability to rent out places in their home. How many people what's our percentage of population that is one and two people in a house?
78%.
So if we can bring that down to 50%, take 20% of the people in this room and say, you know what, you can parcel off a portion of your property, providing you've got on-property parking, you've got a space for that person outside to have their own dwelling, to have their own area. You can't just say, go ahead and rent it out. You've got to have some criteria to make it a home. Thank you.
And just for clarification, under the new bylaw for short-term rentals, it's required that they have off-street parking.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And an area outside, cordoned off.
But
I just would like to mention that care home, I mean, maybe we don't have a lot for care homes here for our old age.
No.
Okay, so there you go. They're taking up a lot of our single dwelling houses, just right.
Mm.
They've got most of them, and they have nowhere to go. Obviously, they're not going to give up their houses.
And this is part
of what Qantas
are trying to do. And we had a meeting with Christiansen Village, and you know they're looking at a means by which they could expand. But the big problem, as Mayor White mentioned, that they're having is right now they can't get staff. So
right.
What do they do?
So
in fact, they're operating below capacity because
right.
they can't get the staff, so they can come up to
yeah,
capacity.
Yeah, it's chicken or the egg. It's the same thing, right? So, but like in lieu of that, anybody that's going to take over these properties is what I'm saying. So say our old age do move into care facilities. Anybody that's going to be able to afford and be community-oriented a home here in Gibson's is going to have rentals. They're going to have to. Like there's no way even like a nuclear family can afford you know, $1 million property. There has to be some sort of income outside the family, right?
Yeah, that's the way it works. I mean, what Pam was talking about was the kind of thing I was imagining, having a short term. Can't the town have emergency bylaw exemptions for certain waivers for a certain amount of time? Because it is a crisis.
I fully agree with you, and you know we're trying to come up with ways for incentivizing rental. But you know we're also, as was like, there's a provincial directive up with respect to living in an RV. We get criticized for dangling a carrot out there, saying it's temporary, a temporary use. You know, we had a property that Mr. Royer is currently working with a developer, who came to us and applied for a temporary use permit for an RV park. And we were criticized for, well, it's only temporary. What sense of stability are you giving people in only creating this temporary situation? Fortunately, with that, the owner of that property, he's currently working with Mr. Royer to create rental housing.
Yes, I understand that there would be quite a lot of...
You know, so it's, you know, it's what are you offering people? You know, here you can come and park your RV for 3 years.
Yes.
But in 3 years, you're going to have to get out of here.
Absolutely.
Because in three years, we might not have
this critical housing crisis.
Exactly. So
created all of these other.
One thing to keep in mind too, is our bylaw enforcement is complaint driven, you know, largely complaint driven, and once a complaint is made, the bylaw enforcement officer has a responsibility to follow up on it. But it's not so much the town turning a blind eye, it's neighbors being accepting of the fact that
the temporary
bylaw to the neighbor. I just think emergency, can we not call it an emergency?
Mm-hmm. Is your neighbor gonna be okay with you parking an RV in your driveway?
No.
Are they not gonna come to the town and say this is ridiculous, like this?
Yes.
I'm just curious because I know my neighbor would lose their mind. No, I'm just saying my neighbor would lose their mind, right?
You know, under the temporary use permit, which is, you can get a permit for 3 years and then an extension for an additional 3 years. But in order to get that, what happens within a 25 or 50 meter radius of your residence, letters go out to see if the neighbors are going to be happy with you having an RV parked in your driveway that you're renting out. And then there becomes the other issue. It has to be able to be moved.
Another issue.
Because how do you deal with the sewage and water?
We're 5 to 9, and I've got a few people with their hands up. So Bill, Denise, and Gaetan, and then they'd like to close things up.
I'll be very quick. Am I correct that there's $85,000 or $95,000 in this year's budget to commit to the rewrite of the Fisher Community Plan? I did see that in the last budget that I looked at, but I don't know if it was cut out.
We haven't seen the next one yet.
We haven't seen yet.
We had money in the previous budget from the OCP, which has been pushed forward. Yeah. So I'm not exactly sure the exact amount.
So the question is whether you have money in the OCP to start up.
And money in the budget.
It takes 13 to 15 people if I require call the last one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the second point I would make is my recollection is the OCP did a great job of Lower Gibson's, but largely ignored Upper Gibson's because it wasn't a big priority at that time. So if you're revisiting the OCP, it may be that most of the work needs to be directed to Upper Gibson's anyways.
Well, I think it might have just been Upper Gibson's neighborhood plan was when? 2005? Leanne?
No, Barry? Neighborhood plan. Upper Gibson's neighborhood plan was 2009, I think.
Okay. And then the harbor plan was after that. So
Gospel Rock was after that. And then the harbor plan was after that. And it was changed again.
And the OCP compiled them all, really.
Yes.
So Upper Gibson's has not been looked at since 2009.
2009, yeah. Denise.
So I think a lot of this conversation has strayed from the original. A lot of the things that we're talking about are province-wide, maybe even Canada-wide issues, which I appreciate. I think it's great to hear about them. However, I think there was a question by Mr. Krull that got sidetracked. Was how many people would be okay with six-story buildings in Upper Gibson's. And specifically in Upper Gibson's, what do we want to see in terms of density and height?
And just to your point, and the lady over here, I'm not suggesting a wall from School Road to to Veterans, a solid six-story building.
And I wasn't intimating that either. It's my concern is that we're going to end up like West Van, North Van,
White Rock, the Lower Mainland,
Fraser Valley, you name it. And it's we're just waiting to be kicked off, and we have an opportunity to do it responsibly. That's my point.
I'd just like to bring the conversation to end on the Upper Gibson.
The reason why I asked about the housing question was not to put you on the spot, Councillor.
I'm
glad it did.
Really?
The question was about why are we delving into housing when we have ultimate responsibilities under the Community Charter, under the Local Government Act, which are the provision of water, sewer, roads, fire protection, those fundamentals that are covered under those pieces of legislation. And I want to come back to the most basic of all things that predicate growth and development, and that is water. And I want you to go to a site under the Forest Range, the Alphabet Ministry, Forest Lands Resources. And you go and you can see the various wells that are drawing from our aquifer. Okay? Those are the ones that have been registered since 2016. They do not predicate how much volume each well is drawing, but they do indicate where they are. So, as our former planner used to say, Chris Marshall, that which you don't measure, you can't manage. So, you have a series of wells drawing from the Elphinstone Aquifer. We do not know how much they are drawing, but we are continuing on this impetus to have more growth and development in the community. We can't deny that. It's going to come. But we need to understand what the parameters for development are. The number one is water. We need to get this issue under control. Mm-hmm. If we don't get water under control, we're all screwed. Really. You really need to get it done.
And are you talking about regional water, like SCRD?
Well, water's regional. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we really need to concentrate on understanding what the water parameters are. Because as Gaetan would know from District of Seashell, there's a significant issue. And we can only provide water for the regional district for so long before we're going to get our peepees whacked, as Councillor Kroll said.
So is there a chance or a possibility that the government will just intervene and make the municipalities amalgamate if we don't get this figured out?
No.
That's not the problem. Yeah.
No, I'm just asking if it's a possibility.
It's not talked about at all these days at provincial
government. Well, the government's mandate, because I've seen it, I've actually read about it.
Yeah, it's happened in Toronto, it's happened in New Brunswick, but it's not really on the agenda in BC these days.
No, but it'll stop the...
Gaetan?
Yeah, just three quick points that I think are relevant. It looks like a big surge of applications right now, and right across Canada, there's policies that are being put in place to encourage housing. The government is in the process of putting people out of their home by raising interest rates, and many communities don't have rental housing. And this is all part of climate change as well, that we have to live differently. We can't continue to cut the forest and pay the ALR and expand our single-family housing subdivisions forever. We have to live in a more compact way. So the federal government has got incentives. CMHC now extends for developers 45 years, and in some cases 50 years amortization on the mortgage to encourage rental housing. That's not available for anything. That's not available for condos, but that's available for rental housing. So the federal government is pushing for this. The provincial government, when we were talking about the amount of when do we stop building rental housing, a healthy rental housing climate is about 3% vacancy. So at 3% vacancy, people start to compete with one another. You know, their unit is vacant. Oh, this is the second month is vacant. I'm going to lower the rent. So the rents are not going to be going up forever. And Ken said, well, it's a supply and demand issue. When there's zero supply, when people live three, four people in a one-bedroom apartment because they were able to find it, it's not suitable, but they rent it anyways. So when you have vacancy, there's going to be relief, and the surge is going to stop. And the last point I want to make is Mayor White said at the start of the meeting, who's missing in the room? And I'll talk about one person. One person on our staff, Ellen, is somebody with accessibility challenge. She walks with a walker. She lives about 10 minutes from here, but probably close to an hour for her if she was to try. She requires 48 hours to be able to attend a meeting like this. I invited her as soon as I knew that this was going, and she could not have the handy dart, and she would not be able to have the handy dart at 9 p.m. because they don't run at that time. So it is really important that we think about others. You know, there's people who just don't have access to the housing that they need, and she won't climb on the ladder to fix the gutters. She needs multifamily housing. And the future of our society is multifamily housing.
And just to Gaetan's point with Ellen, I introduced Ellen to Gaetan, and I'm very proud of her. She's moved to the community. She worked with Rick Hansen in Vancouver on transportation and accessibility. And just incredible asset to our community for the input that she's bringing. She's already working with some developers in the community where they're looking at creating accessible suites, and she's working with them to help them design the suites based on her background. So great asset, but you know, the head of there stopped running at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah. Good luck. Who is missing? Were there others? I mean, youth is always the big one.
Young family, liaison to the province. Anyone who depends on public transit is likely to be missing, although at least this place is on the line. Just in closing, any last words that you'd like to leave us with?
How about you, David? How about you do the last words? You can do the last words.
I do appreciate the fact that this was last minute notice, but I'm really impressed with the number of people that came out. Silas has been taking notes, Anne-Marie's been taking notes, Rebecca's been taking notes, our communication officer has been listening. So I'd just like to really thank everyone. We don't want to make mistakes, obviously.
I want to put that last word in, please.
Sorry?
I want to add my last word. You said it to someone good. I think when it comes to viability, which is a term developers throw out a lot, there's more than one way to create the viability. And it doesn't have to necessarily be a square six-story building. And there's all kinds of examples all over the world where there's different forms of affordable architecture than that format, which we seem to be very stuck on. And I think we should be encouraging developers to look at other options.
Thanks for closing up, David. But I had a look at some of the ideas that have been put forward that I'd like to include in the report to go forward to council, to include in the strategic plan or to consider in some way in coming months. I've also got some paper here if you come up and you see your idea isn't here, you can write it in before you go. That's all I wanted to say.
Mayor White, I would like to thank the three members of council who did make it here.
The four.
Four members. Very much appreciated. I think we started off well. Wow. We should continue this. And we're here to help you make our town a better place to live and a place where everyone is welcome.
And as Mayor White said at the beginning, we want to get into the area where it's happening. Town Hall is not the place to talk about the Upper Village.
In 5 minutes. Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for coming.